Taped from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Hey, Darren, how's it going?
Going good, going good. I'm 1 year older and deeper in debt.
That's right. That's right. Yes, you had officially had your birthday between last episode and this one, and you increased your debt.
Hooray!
Yay!
I did it.
I knew you could do it.
Oh, huzzah, hooray, kalu, kalay.
Congratulations, buddy.
Thank you.
Knew you had it in you.
Thank you, yes. But yeah, when you're older, don't feel that much different. But, I mean, I don't know, we'll whatever. They just say age is a number anyway, and you're only as old as you feel.
So. Yeah, that's just a thing they say to make old people feel better.
Yes. I choose to hold on to that phrase with all my might, just to make myself feel a little bit better.
Yeah.
These end times.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's all downhill from here, buddy.
Oh, thanks, man. All right.
Sure. Yeah. No.
Oh, God. Doom and gloom. That's how we start off this podcast.
That's right. But we did get a little bit of SNL news since we last recorded an episode. If you're wondering why we didn't talk about the latest announced hosts for SNL when they're coming back, it's because we didn't know about them yet. We recorded last week's episode a little early, so that's why.
Yes. But yeah, so after we recorded, the news came out. The news broke, as they say in the biz. April 6th, I'll go back a little bit. We all know.
Yeah, March 30th, right?
Yeah, well, March 30th, we all know it's going to be Rami Youssef. Mm-hmm. And Travis Scott, Rami Youssef, right. Jersey's own from the great Garden State, mm-hmm. Stand-up comic who also had a Hulu show, Rami, which I've seen and I enjoy quite a bit. He also has a new stand-up special coming out on HBO Max. And he was also most recently in the movie Poor Things. So you can check him out on that.
A lot of Oscar buzz on that one.
Yeah, a lot of Oscar buzz. I believe he won a Golden Globe for his TV show, too. So he's out here. He's doing things.
Nice.
But after that, April 6th, we got Kristen Wiig.
Oh, I've heard of her.
Yes. Oh, she's very good. And, this is her fifth time hosting, I believe.
Mm-hmm. She's got a new show coming up on Apple TV.
Yeah. Palm Royals, if I'm not mistaken. I believe it's out now, actually. Yeah. Yeah. And, so she's hosted five times before. First time on May 11th, 2013, musical guest Vampire Weekend. November 19th, 2016, with musical guest The XX, if you remember them. May 9th, 2020, one of the SNL At Home episodes she hosted with Boyz II Men. Mm-hmm. And then December 19th, 2020, with Dua Lipa. And like, I know some people are wondering, well, does that SNL At Home count? Because it was, one of the lockdown episodes. And from what I understand, one of our good friends of the show, John Schneider, he reached out to somebody at NBC. I guess he has a hookup over there. And according to NBC, they say that the SNL At Home episodes do count. So this will be technically, officially, her fifth time hosting.
Hmm. So we've actually discussed three of her four previous hosting episodes of SNL. Like, her first one was before our time, but
yes, the 2013 one we didn't do, but yeah, the other four times we have. So go back into the archive and listen to those, guys. So April 6th, Kristen Wiig, and musical guest Ray, who is a new artist I'm not super familiar with. I listened to some of her stuff. It kind of sounds like Lily Allen, Amy Winehouse, Duffy kind of vibes I got.
Okay.
From it. So it sounds all right. April 13th, we got the Goss, Ryan Gosling, coming back for the third time hosting the show. He's hosted before, first time hosting. Let me pull this up.
I enjoy him as a host. I mean, Papyrus is still a favorite of mine. That was brilliant. And I mean, Ryan Gosling, that is a guy who knows how to commit to the bit. I mean, I assume you saw him doing I'm Just Ken at the Oscars.
Yeah. No, he's good. Like, I mean,
he put his all into it, man.
He really does. Like, I think when he kind of, I mean, people kind of forget that he kind of came up in the Disney TV machine. Man was a Mouseketeer. But then he started doing like these kind of gritty dramas. But then, like, he started doing like these, you know, kind of wacky, goofy comedies. We're exploring his funny bone side, like The Nice Guys and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's like, oh, he's got some comedy chops too. He first hosted December 5th, 2015, musical guest Leon Bridges. And then September 30th, 2017, with Jay-Z. So this will be his third time behind the wheel. I'm looking forward to it. He's probably there to promote his new movie coming out in May, The Fall Guy, based on the TV show from the 80s. So
this, with Lee Majors.
With Lee Majors, that's right.
Well, so, not the kind to kiss and tell, but I've been seen with Farrah.
Oh, wow.
Great theme song.
I gotta go back and watch that, because I don't think I was a big Fall Guy.
It wasn't a show that I watched every week, but it was one of those ones that I'd turn on sporadically. It was, you know, he was Lee Majors. He played Colt Seaver, who was a stuntman who worked as a bounty hunter on the side. So he'd go after, you know, people who skipped out on bail and things like that. And he'd always, you know, I guess he'd get involved with whatever the story of the week was and all that. And I remember Doug Barr was his sidekick, who was also a stuntman, and Heather Thomas was also in the mix. I can't remember if she was a stuntwoman or not. Wow. And Marky Post was in there too.
Before, from Night Court.
Before she was on Night Court. Yeah.
Oh, wowee. Look at that.
And then she left the show and then she was on Night Court.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, wow. Yeah, I think at this time I was probably more of a solid A-team slash Knight Rider man.
I didn't watch it every week, but you know, you'd watch it once in a while to pass the time agreeably.
Stunt man by day, bounty hunter by night. It practically writes itself, those scripts.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, so Ryan Gosling coming up on the 13th of April. Musical guest Chris Stapleton. This will be his third time on the show. He was first on January 16th, 2016 on the Adam Driver episode, and January 27th, 2018 on the Will Ferrell episode. So got a little country, got a little
rock and roll.
Yes. Oh, yeah. That makes more sense.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm looking forward to the Ryan Gosling episode more than the Kristen Wiig episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think with the Kristen Wiig episode, I mean, we kind of know what we're going to
We're in for, yeah.
Yeah, we do. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we get some cameos, probably from Maya Rudolph, probably mm-hmm. from who else?
I don't know, maybe some other people from her era, yeah.
Yeah, sure. If I had to put, you know, if I had to put money down, I would say there's a good chance Maya Rudolph is going to make a guest appearance.
Yeah, they're tight, so.
They're pretty tight. But yeah, like the Ryan Gosling one, I think he's a little bit more of a loose cannon, so it'll be interesting to see what he brings and, like, you know, to see what he's, you know, what his episode is going to be like. Either way, both of these episodes I'm looking forward to.
Yeah. And there was also a little bit of news on the film front. Jason Reitman's upcoming film SNL 1975, which is going to be a behind the scenes drama about the broadcast or the lead up to the very first episode of SNL on October 11th, 1975, they announced a few more cast members, and we've even seen like a few stills drop. I don't know if they're official stills or not. I'm not sure, but let me run down who we have on the casting so far that we previously talked about. We got Gabriel LaBelle as Lorne Michaels, Michael Smith as Chevy Chase, Matt Wood as John Belushi, Ella Hunt as Gilda Radner, Dylan O'Brien as Dan Aykroyd, Lamorne Morris from New Girl as Garrett Morris, Kim Matula as Jane Curtin, Emily Farn as Lorraine Newman, and then this is on the behind the scenes side, we got Rachel Sennett as writer Rosie Schuster.
Ooh.
We have Cooper Hoffman as NBC exec Dick Ebersol, who's a producer on SNL. And here are some of the new people who've been announced. We've got Nicholas Braun as Jim Henson, but there's like a bit of a question mark or an asterisk on this one, because he was apparently announced as Jim Henson, or people were saying he was playing Jim Henson, but now like in the stills that have come out, he's obviously dressed as Andy Kaufman, like dressed exactly how Andy Kaufman looked on the very first episode of SNL when he did the Mighty Mouse bit.
Right. So like, I don't know, like what's happening here. Was the announcement that he's going to be Henson wrong, or are they just doing a little like rope-a-dope and trying to confuse us by having him come out dressed up as Andy Kaufman?
I don't know. Like in the picture I'm looking at, the man definitely looks more like Jim Henson than he looks like Andy Kaufman. But on the other hand, we've seen photos of him dressed exactly like Andy Kaufman, and he's like holding a record player under his arm. So it's like, obviously you're playing Andy Kaufman. So,
right. Yeah. And like, I guess no one else, there's been no new news about it. No one's come forward saying, no, actually he's doing this or what. So it's
yeah,
a bit of a mystery around
it's,
this.
It's kind of weird. It's kind of weird. I don't know why that would be wrong. I don't know. Anyway. Other people have been announced. Tommy Dewey as Michael O'Donohue.
Ooh.
You know, it looks okay. You're very handsome for Michael O'Donohue, I would say. Okay. And we have Nicholas Podnay as Billy Crystal, who was sort of infamously cut from the first episode of SNL.
Yes. Yes, I remember reading about that.
Yeah, he apparently was cut from the very first episode of SNL, although he later performed a monologue in the 17th episode of the first season. And then of course very famously became a cast member in the 80s. And then lastly we have Kaia Gerber as Jacqueline Carlin, who was the girlfriend and later wife of Chevy Chase. And she was And like part of the reason that Chevy Chase left SNL when he did early in the second season was because he was in a serious relationship and he was like, oh, this is going to go the distance. And
right. Yeah. So. I think I remember hearing Chevy talk about that in interviews. We're like, yeah, I kind of left the show just for a girl. And and we just went to LA, and I think he's even kind of regretted that. It's like, yeah, I should have stuck around a little bit longer.
Yeah, because I don't believe he's still married to that woman anymore. I believe he's on at least a second marriage. Oh, and actually there are a couple more people that I said lastly, and I was wrong. We've got Andrew Barth Feldman as Neil Levy,
ooh,
or Levy, who was Lorne Michaels' cousin, who served as a talent coordinator and production assistant on SNL for nearly a decade.
Oh, wow.
And lastly, we have Finn Wolfhard as an NBC page.
Yes, from Stranger Things.
Yes, from Stranger Things and also the new Ghostbusters movies. And amusingly, on this Entertainment Weekly article that I have, they have a picture of Finn Wolfhard on one side and then Kenneth the Page from 30 Rock
on the other. Is this the origin stories of Kenneth the Page?
They should have just cast Jack McBrayer. That would have been hilarious. Just have Jack you know, 50-year-old Jack McBrayer there as an NBC page in the 70s and not comment on it at all.
Yes. Same haircut, same look, just don't even.
Right. Yeah, because Kenneth is immortal.
Yes, of course. He'll outlive us all.
Yeah.
But yeah, so far I'm liking this this casting so far. Like I can't think or like no one here seems like super out of place or like, oh, I wouldn't play them. Like
yeah, I'm really looking forward to it coming out. I don't know if they've announced a release date for it yet, but I'm really interested in seeing this. This is going to be a lot of fun, and you know, we are for sure going to cover it on the podcast whenever it comes out.
Oh, absolutely. We are all over this here on the SNL Nerds. We promise you that, dear listener. You can bet your bottom dollar that the SNL Nerds will cover this thoroughly when it comes out.
Yes. We are going to analyze this like it's the freaking Zapruder film.
That's right. That's right. Put in another pot of coffee, boys.
And actually, yeah, if you're interested in hearing what we thought of SNL's actual first episode, you can hear that on, I believe we did that back on episode 100. We went back and watched the very first episode of SNL.
Yes, we did.
You can find that in the archives.
That's right. Dig through the archives. We have tons and tons of just side-splitting entertainment for you people.
We really do. And hey, you know, we're going to give you a little more this week, because this week we are covering Diary of a Young Comic, which was something that aired in SNL's time slot in the summer of 1979.
So basically when we were thinking about what to do, you know, because SNL is off this week, we're trying to think about what can we do. We were, of course, talking about the passing of the late, great Richard Lewis that happened a few weeks ago. And I remember thinking when he passed, like, oh, did he ever host SNL? Is there any connection between him and SNL, so like then we could talk about it on the podcast. Yeah. Unfortunately, he never hosted, and this movie seems to be the only SNL connection he has. Yeah, so it was this movie, Diary of a Young Comic, a made-for-TV movie, came out February 3rd, 1979, aired while SNL was on hiatus, produced by the great Lorne Michaels, directed by Gary Weiss, who
directed a lot of the short films that were on SNL back in the day.
Yes, he did that. He also co-produced and he also co-directed, rather, the Beatlemania spoof, All You Need Is Cash, with Eric Idle.
The Ruddles, yes.
Yes, and then in the 80s, he actually went to direct a couple of music videos, including You Can Call Me Al with Paul Simon, which the video which also has Chevy Chase in it. And, of course, the timeless classic Got My Mind Set on You by George Harrison.
Nice. So a lot of music videos where the guy just sits in a chair.
Yes, that's his MO.
And gets up once in a while.
Yep. That's his lane, and he's sticking to it.
Yeah, so we did a little research. Turns out this is playing on Tubi. You know, it's not a good-looking transfer. It's like, a shitty VHS transfer, but...
It's grainy as all hell.
Yeah, it's honestly, this thing looks like a student film, doesn't it?
I swear to you, that's exactly what I wrote down.
Yeah.
This thing looks like a straight-up student film. But yeah, the script was written by Richard Lewis and Bennett Tramer, based on a story that was conceived by Weiss or Weiss?
I think it's Weiss.
Weiss, okay. Weiss decided to put Richard in the film after watching him perform at the Comedy Store in LA. And he said after one of his sets, and then Tramer approached Lewis after one of his stand-up sets at the Improv and suggested that Lewis might be a good fit. And then that's how the kind of whole thing came together. And yeah, this definitely has like a very almost DIY student, very much a student film, like you said.
Yeah. I'm kind of thinking of like a line from the Mystery Science Theater 3000 episode, Manos, the Hands of Fate. They were like, every frame of this movie looks like someone's last known photograph. It's just, it's somebody uploaded it from an old VHS recording. So it's just very grainy, murky. It looks like it's just shot on video. So it's not a good looking film.
It's not. The film itself is okay. It's a very simple premise. Richard Lewis plays this stand-up comic named Billy Gondola, but his real last name is Gondelstein.
Hiding his Jewishness. Oh my goodness.
I know. Oi, what a shanda.
First off, the premise of Richard Lewis hiding his Jewishness.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to catch on now, Richard.
Well, that's right. you hide it so well. So he's this comic in New York. He decides, like, it's not happening for me in New York, so yeah. I'm going to move to L.A.
And it's the most expositional first scene I've seen in a movie in quite some time. We see like the tail end of him doing a stand-up set in New York, and then he's just talking with his friend at the bar, and he's like, oh no, it's not working. I'm gonna go out to LA and see if I can make it happen there. And it's just real artificial exposition, and like Richard Lewis wasn't real practice as an actor yet.
And, it shows.
And there's no music, so it just seems real amateurish,
Yeah, it's very much so. Like you said, like him starting off, the film starts off with him doing a set and bombing.
Silence.
Yeah, it's rough. And he also tells this joke, like him doing stand-up is like the eighth year of a 9-year fraternity prank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And of course, it's not a bad line.
Audience, it gives it nothing. And then he's like, yeah, it's not happening here for me in New York. I'm going to LA, which I've heard or I've seen and I've known a number of comics here in the New York scene that have like had that same thought. It's like, well, it's not happening here, so let me make it not happen in LA.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, hey, it's So yeah, he. So he closed the shop, sold the house, bought a ticket to the West Coast.
Ooh.
Now he gives him a stand-up routine in L.A.
Da, 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 da.
Did you know, like, there apparently was a rumor that that song was about Richard Lewis? I just found this out after Richard Lewis passed. Yeah. Some people were saying that, you know, Billy Joel had written that song about Richard Lewis. It turns out not true. He wrote it about another friend of his whose name I can't recall right now. But, like, Richard Lewis had heard this, and he actually got to ask Billy Joel about it, and Billy Joel was like, nope, sorry, it's not about you.
Okay. Oh, my God, that's, like, another thing that probably gave him anxiety and make him nervous.
Oh, yeah, nervous. Most likely. I mean,
like, did you write this about me? Oh, my God. Oh.
Giving Richard Lewis anxiety. Like, that's a big trick.
Yeah, exactly. Probably approached Carly Simon. Did you write that song about me? That song about me? I probably thought it
was. No, Richard, if it was like, you're so neurotic, you probably think the song is about you. Then it would be about you.
Good point.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did kind of like the scene where we see that Billy Gondola is actually staying with his parents.
Yeah.
And like his family is sitting down for dinner, but they have Billy sit at the kids' table.
Yeah, he's at the kids' table in the next room, and he's talking with his parents in the next room because we see him, and then there's like a little boy just sitting and eating next to him. That was kind of cute.
Yeah, that was a cute little vibe, a cute little scene that they had there. And I did like that. I also liked when he was in the club talking to his fellow comic buddy friend, like saying things like, "Yeah, they didn't get the joke about the cream of soup." Or the cream of mushroom, and they're like, that's too cerebral for them. They don't
get it. Yeah.
It's too cerebral.
I mean, audiences are simple. They want their chicken noodle material. You know?
That's right.
You can't hit them with that intellectual cream of mushroom stuff.
Exactly. That's too much for them.
Yeah.
But yeah, the parents aren't too crazy about him moving to LA, saying, they got voodoo cults out there. You shouldn't go.
Mm-hmm.
And then they show him just kind of getting on a bus, making his way to L.A. and like him driving through all the cities that you drive through to get to L.A. from New York City, like Cleveland, Toledo, Dayton, Columbus, L.A.
That's the route.
Yep. I was like, four of the cities are in one state. Like, why didn't they spread that out a bit?
I don't know. I guess only eventful things happen to him in Ohio.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Ohio, that's where all the actions happen.
That's right. And then, like, when he gets to L.A., he's getting his suitcase off the bus, and he says something to the porter. He's like, that's my suitcase. And I think he asks, his cousin is late picking him up, and he asks the porter, he's like, is there another waiting area? Am I missing something? And the guy's like, don't ask me. I'm not a porter. I'm actually an actor just waiting for my big break. And that's kind of a running gag throughout. Everybody he meets is not really the thing that they're actually doing for a living. They're actually waiting to make it in some creative field.
Yeah, which is a very LA thing I've heard. Like everybody you meet, like, you know, your plumber, your barista, your paper boy or whatever. Yeah. They're not actually their job. They're actually some type of creative type.
He's talking with Davey, who's still in the Navy and probably will be for life.
Wow, we are on a Billy Joel rant here over here. Not rant, but run. That's the word.
Yeah, yeah. We always are, baby.
Okay. Oh, wow. All right. I got to figure out how to work another Billy Joel song into this.
Yeah, just let it come to you. Don't try to force it. Just let it come.
Pressure! Did it! Bam!
Yeah, you'll just have to learn to pace yourself.
Oh god. Oh man, I have to tell her about it.
Yeah.
So
Darren, just a word of caution: whatever you do, don't turn your tap dance into your crusade.
Nice.
Don't
leave
do it.
Leave the tender moment alone.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You just gotta be keeping the faith.
Is this a Billy Joel podcast now?
I think it might be.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So join us next week for Are You Talking Billy Joel to Me?
God. Oh man, we go to extremes. I don't know why.
Well, you know, it's always been a matter of trust.
Okay, all right, now we got to talk about this movie. It's enough. It's enough.
Okay. All right.
So he gets in a cab. Cab driver, of course, is not a cab driver. He's a composer. He sings some of his songs for him that are quite good. I did like the line
you
where
think?
He... Yeah, okay. I do think. And then I do like the line when he gets to his destination and the cab driver's like, oh, no, I'm not finished singing the rest of it. And he's like, no, I wouldn't be surprised when the album comes out. Don't
yeah, me. Yeah.
And he gets to his cousin's house, and it appears like his cousin's in some type of cult.
Yeah, she's like in a towel, like she just got out of the shower. Her hair's wrapped up in a towel or a sheet. She her name is Shirley, but she says like, I now go by she because essence is all that matters to me anymore. And Billy comes into the apartment. Her apartment is completely devoid of furniture. She's like, no, it's just the essence of apartment now. And there's just some straw on the floor.
Right. And yeah, because that's all you need, like a nest. And right. And instead of Billy, he calls him Ba.
Yeah.
And so, because like Ba is the essence of Billy.
Right.
And she's
right.
Sha.
And then her boyfriend, Fred, comes to the door. He's dressed exactly the same in a towel with his hair covered in a sheet, and he's got a bag, and he dumps some more straw on the floor, and she's like, oh, now it's a queen-size bed. Yay!
A queen-size bed.
Yeah. Yeah, so she is obviously insane and very likely in a cult.
Yeah, but there's only two members of the cult, because any more, and it would lose the essence of the cult.
Right, right. So,
or sect, as they say.
So Billy's like, okay, I can't stay here. I got to go get my own place. So he finds like this one bedroom apartment. Stacey Keach plays the landlord.
Yeah.
That was funky.
Mr. Porzinski, yeah. Who's, yeah, exactly. He's a part time stuntman.
Right.
And part time landlord.
Right.
But yeah, interesting. It was interesting to see the Keach.
Yeah, very young Stacey Keach. So he gets in there. He starts looking up agents and managers and stuff like that. He goes by the office of one Mr. Brillstein. Was that the actual Bernie Brillstein? Do you know?
I do not know. I should look that.
Yeah, I don't see him in the cast list here on Wikipedia, but I don't know. So he like Brillstein sends him out on a call. He's like, oh yeah, I got somebody who just walked in, and he sent, and Billy's like, oh well, great, I've already got a gig here in LA. I'm just here on my second day.
Yeah, but I also do like, if you notice, like when he walked into Brillstein's office, on the wall you can see headshots and pictures of Belushi and Radner. I was like, oh,
yeah, there's a Rolling Stone cover with John Belushi and a People magazine cover with Gilda Radner. And I was like, oh, okay, that's cool.
Okay.
It's
a nice little touch.
Yeah, yeah. And he goes over to the other office, and it's Michael Lerner is there. And it's apparently like a dentist's office.
Yeah, he's the agent, and basically... Right. He shares the office with the dentist, who, of course, he's not a dentist. He's actually trying to be a screenwriter.
Right.
And so I think he worked out a deal with the dentist to like, hey, give me this office space and I'll sell your movie.
Yeah.
So, which is a nice little touch. I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's all right. And, you know, always nice to see Michael Lerner. You know, again, just so young in this because it's... You know, he's Michael Lerner, great, great character actor. You've seen him in a million things.
I believe he passed away recently as well.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah. Well, I'll look it up. I'm pretty sure he passed away not too long ago.
And Billy has a neighbor in his place.
Does and how?
Yeah, it's what is her name? I don't have her character name on me. But anyway, she's like a dead ringer from Marilyn Monroe, except she's Australian.
Yes. That's Linda.
Okay. The actress was Linda Carriage, but I'm not finding the character name. It just says Billy's neighbor. So
I believe the character's name was Linda as well.
Oh, okay. All right. And he meets her when she comes over and well, like, she first knocks on his door in the middle of the night, and she's like, oh, do you have this? And it's like some obscure ingredient. And he's no. And then he sees her again later, and she's like, oh, can you help me light the pilot light on my stove? And he's like, oh, hey, I wasn't dreaming. That was your actual person.
Holy moly.
And like, I really like that scene. Like, it, like, he's getting ready to shave. He's like putting shaving cream on his face. And then she knocks on the door and she's like, hey, can you come over, help me light my pilot light? And he's like, oh yeah, sure. And you know, this beautiful woman asking him to come over, and he's like, oh, I better get ready. And he like squirts more shaving cream on his armpit. That made me laugh. That was probably the funniest moment in the movie to me.
Shaving the pits.
Well, just like he's spraying it on his pits like it's deodorant, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty funny line. Yeah. A pretty funny part. Absolutely. But yeah, like, I mean, I don't know. With this movie, it is... I thought it was kind of weird because like a lot of the scenes are just like him kind of going from one kind of situation to another in a way.
Yeah, it's a
like,
very meandering movie. It's
It's like, all right, here, now I'm talking to this person. Now I'm talking to this person. Now I'm talking to this person. Like, I
guess there's not a lot of forward momentum. And it's just, you're just kind of going with him from place to place. And he's writing letters back home. He's like exaggerating about how well he's doing. He's like, oh, I'm hobnobbing with all these celebrities and stuff. And all that.
Of course, then he talks to his agent. His agent says he has to have a car to get around. So he hooks him up with this car dealer who gives him a jalopy of a car, saying, oh, yeah, this car tends to overshift in the third. And occasionally, it'll go into reverse. But there you go. Which, of course, is not safe from what I
remember. We see him sort of like he pulls up to a stop. It kind of overdoes, and then we see the car like back up out of frame, and then the sound of a car crash. We don't have the budget to actually show a car crash.
No, we don't have car crash money.
So we are just going to have him back out of frame and then just dub in the sound of a car crash.
Absolutely.
We get a little Loudon Wainwright the Third theme here, which I thought that was kind of cool. I enjoyed the Loudon Wainwright.
Yeah. I did not, when I looked it up, I was like, oh, that's Loudon Wainwright.
Okay. Yeah. He apparently also makes a cameo appearance in the film, but I totally missed him. Where did he pop up?
I don't know. I looked for him too. I didn't see him anywhere.
Maybe he's just heard and not seen. I don't know.
Maybe he was one of the performers.
I don't know. Anyway, so Billy ends up getting a job at a place that sells placemats with like language on them. That's kind of like a language cheat sheet.
Yeah, like it teaches, it's a placemat that teaches you different languages.
Right.
And which is like, all right, that's a hustle.
Yeah, and he's like interviewing with this, and like during the interview scene, he's talking to one of the bosses, and I swear the guy could not have been an actor, because I swear you see him looking off camera at the cue cards.
Oh, he was not an actor. I'll put money on it.
Yeah. I was just like, really? We don't want to do a second take for this where he's like not looking off camera and obviously reading cue cards? Okay. Yeah. All right.
It's like, all right, your job is to sell these placemats here.
It's really bad. It's literally at that level.
Yeah. I was like, wow. All right. I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. But you know, it adds authenticity, I guess.
Yeah, sure. That's the kindest way to put it. Yeah, people stare off camera at cue cards in real life all the time.
What, you don't?
Yeah. So he's like selling these cue cards. We have a scene where Dom DeLuise comes by and buys a batch, and he's apparently a regular at the store. He's like, I'm having a dinner party. I need like three Norwegians. I need a German. I need a French. I need an Italian.
Yeah, but see, I don't know if he was. He said he was a regular, but I don't know if he was, because like when Richard Lewis was like, or Billy was getting him the placemat, he was like, oh, yeah, I don't need a bag. You just put it in my coat here and then I'll just wrap it up. And then when he tried to charge him, he was like, oh, just put it on my tab.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, is Dom DeLuise stealing these placemats?
I don't know. It's it's one of the more entertaining scenes. It feels like it's half improv'd,
and it's really does.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like it's just Richard Lewis and Dom DeLuise riffing with each other. And
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, very much so. But you know, it's charming enough, I thought.
Yeah, pretty entertaining.
Absolutely. So we see Billy kind of struggling, trying to find his way, getting photo shots, getting headshots.
Yeah.
From a guy.
Yeah, that's a weird scene.
It's a weird scene because he has the same smile in all of them.
Like, well, the photographer makes him dress up in all these various costumes, and he's giving him this coaching throughout. He's like, "Oh, you're being chased by this thing," and da 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 da, and smile. And it's very odd.
It's an odd one for sure. Like, I wasn't quite sure what they were going for with that one.
Yeah, it's almost absurdist, but not entirely. I don't quite know. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But it turns out his agent does get him a gig, and he invites his very lovely neighbor, the Marilyn Monroe looking type, out to the gig. Gets to the gig, he is getting ready backstage. It turns out it's like a drag show.
Yeah. The host is like, he meets the host before the show, and they're like, "Oh yeah, well, come on into the green room and get ready for the show." And then we cut to Richard Lewis getting ready, and then like he turns around, and then the host is there, and then now the host is in full drag, and because it's 1979, that is the beginning and the end of the joke.
Yes, of course.
It's just like a man dressing up as a woman. What?
That's wah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And he gets up on stage, and he's wearing like a feather boa, so he kind of fits in with the drag theme of the show. And he just kind of doesn't even tell a joke. He's just like, I'm not really feeling the vibe, so thank you very much, and walks off stage.
Yeah. I mean, as a comic, that scene kind of bothered me, because like, well, I mean,
stage time is stage time.
Yeah, it is. Stage time is, even if you're like, I've done a ton of shows where I wasn't feeling up to it or feeling really great, but like, you got to do the time. And sometimes when I do that, I push through, like, the show actually ends up being pretty good. I'm like, oh, I'm glad I did that. Like, to kind of be on stage, and the show seemed like a good show. The audience seemed, I mean, I wasn't there, but the audience seemed attentive, and the host was nice, so I was like, well, just do your act, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you're already on stage. I wonder, now that I think of it, I wonder if that was possibly inspired by, like, supposedly when Larry David was an up-and-coming stand-up comic.
Oh, right.
One time he, like, supposedly got on stage, just took one look at the audience and was like, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not performing this. This is not my crowd. And then just, like, walked off stage.
That's kind of funny. When he does it, I laughed.
Yeah, but. So I wonder if they were going for something like that. I don't know.
Maybe.
Even weirder, I thought, like, later in the movie, he's, like, in line to perform at, one of the LA clubs, like the Comedy Store, or the Improvisation, I forget which. And he's talking with the guy in front of him in line, and they're like, oh, what number are you? Oh, I'm 30, and the guy in front of him is like number 29. So he's the 30th comic to go up that night, probably just doing 5 minutes. And then he just like, and he's in line waiting to go. And I guess because the guy in front of him is talking big and talking about how he kills every time. And then again, Billy just decides, oh, I'm not feeling it. I'm just going to go home. And I'm just like, what? You're already there. You're already on the list. You're waiting. What the hell, man?
Yeah, no, I get that too. I think at this point they were kind of showing him having, like, him getting in his own head and having doubts.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe the fact that the guy before him was, self-proclaimed, like, a killer.
Yeah, he's really talking himself up, but you don't get a vibe that he's actually funny.
Yeah. You think just hearing him, I was like, oh, this dude's all talk. He ain't kill. Yeah.
This guy's he's all about impressions.
Yeah, like, oh, I got these great impressions, man. I'm about to be on Carson. It's gonna be great.
Yeah,
but I was like, no, he's all bluster.
Yeah,
but I guess in the movie they wanted to get across that Billy was getting in Billy's head, and he was having doubts, and he was doubting himself.
Yeah, not, that could have come through a little clearer, I think.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I got it, what they were going for, but they could have made it a little bit more concrete about it.
Yeah, like, yeah, no, I mean, when that happened, I was just like, what the hell, man?
Yeah, just go up there and give it a shot. What the flip? What are you going to lose?
Do the time. What, you know?
That's right. Fortune favors the bold.
Yeah.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
That's true.
That's right. Words of wisdom.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we see him kind of doubting himself and not quite, you know, finding his place in LA just yet, even though I don't think it's been that long, but,
No. I mean, it's kind of vague on how long he's been there, but probably only like maybe a week or two or something.
Yeah.
You know, towards the end of the movie, we see him do a stand-up set and he says he's been in LA for 6 months and he's kind of found his footing by then.
Yeah, absolutely. But he's still trying to find himself. I mean, he's got he's got a hot ass neighbor that likes him. That's pretty cool.
he helps her light her,
come on,
light
baby,
her pilot light, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Come on, baby, light my fire.
But honestly, like they never seem to be like more than friends. I think she gives him a kiss on the cheek at one point, and that's about it.
Yeah, it never seems to be like romantic.
Yeah.
But then we see a scene of him going to his therapist. When I saw it, I was like, how can he afford a therapist? What the fuck?
Man, it's Richard Lewis. He finds a way.
Okay. Man's eating gefilte fish for dinner. Come on. he can afford a therapist? All right. And I did like this one visual gag they had in the therapist scene.
Yeah.
Where if you look on the back of the wall, you see pictures of all these celebrities that the therapist has worked with. But all their eyes are kind of had the big black bar across them.
Yeah, they're all taped over. Yeah.
Yeah, to protect their anonymity, which is like, that's a pretty kind of funny little LA gag. Where it's like, yeah. I want you to know all these celebrities I've treated, but I have to protect their anonymity as well.
Yeah, yeah. And then on the way out, he sees like one still up there, and it's like a dolphin, and he's got black tape over his eyes. And Billy just goes, isn't that Flipper?
It's like, how do you recognize that as Flipper? All the dolphins look like.
Well, it's how many famous dolphins are there?
And
the therapist is like, yeah, I can neither confirm nor deny that.
I can't. But please, my patients deserve their privacy, Billy. Yeah. I can't. But yeah, then it goes into this other scene where he's eating at this health food store and he meets this other woman.
Yeah. Van Palland.
Yeah, as herself.
As herself, yeah. And I don't know if she was like more known in 1979 or what. I just looked her up. She doesn't seem to have a whole lot of big credits. She was in the movie The Long Goodbye, the Robert Altman movie, A Wedding, which I think is another Altman quintet. It says she had mild sex scenes with Richard Gere in American Gigolo and Jeff Bridges in Cutter's Way, which is 1981. And in the James Bond movie On Her Majesty's Secret Service, she sang the John Barry Hal David song, Do You Know How Christmas Trees Are Grown? So.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. Well, that's something.
So that's about it. I don't know. She's kind of fallen by the wayside, but apparently still with us. She is still kicking it at 91.
Nice. All right. There you go. Shout out to you, Nina.
Yeah.
But then they strike up a conversation.
Yeah.
And he asks her out, but she's going to be out of the country shooting a film in, like, I guess the Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia.
Yeah, something like that.
And but then I don't know, that scene kind of doesn't really go anywhere. It's just like a little kind of slice of life.
I think it's just supposed to illustrate that he's slowly gaining confidence. Because he, like, when they walk out of the health food place, he says something like, oh, I can't believe that I had the guts to do that. Like, because she's being kind of, like, there's this guy who's kind of droning on, and Richard Lewis kind of breezes in and sort of rescues her from that with, like, a little white lie. So.
Yes.
And,
okay.
And then when they're walking out, he's like, oh, I can't believe I had the guts to do that. So I think it's just to show his burgeoning confidence.
Yeah, it's like it happened a while. Like, we didn't talk about it, but there was like another scene where he's in a diner eating a Danish, and then this motorcycle guy named like Lucifer comes in, and then they kind of have a little discussion about how they kind of both grew up in the same neighborhood back in New York.
Right.
And like that, you know, it kind of really doesn't go anywhere, but like, it's like, it feels like a very kind of natural, you know, discussion that, or chat that two people would have where they talk about things from their past and be like, hey, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they seem to be hitting it off. And at the end, you know, he's like, oh, well, we should get together. We should have a drink, or, you know, you can come see me at, you perform at my thing. And he's like, and Billy says like, oh, could I get your number? And the guy's like, oh, no, I'm around. You can find me.
I'm just in the wind, baby.
Yeah.
So like, yeah. So I guess the scenes like that to show, I guess maybe counteract the scenes where he's bombing on stage or he's unsure of himself, where it's like, oh, yeah, some good things happened when he's out, when he came to LA too. And like some not great things happen in LA.
Yeah. And there's a scene towards the end where his family comes out and surprises him out in LA. They kind of picked up from his letters that he's not doing quite as well as he said he was. And so they come out to kind of support him or take care of, or trying to convince him to come back east.
Right, exactly. Like, I think before this, like, Billy went to see a comic in at a comedy club, and the comic is like a prop comic.
Yeah.
And he has like, he's playing with like, you know, toy frogs and whatnot and a guitar.
Yeah.
And he gets like inspired. It's like, oh, and like, he's getting big laughs though. And then Billy gets inspired by that. Like, oh, I should be a prop comic. That's it.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, prop comedy,
Well, it's a very specialized thing.
It is.
I don't want to run down prop comedy, honestly.
Okay. We're not here to slander prop comedy.
Well, I mean, look, Carrot Top, for a lot of people, he's like kind of the go-to for like an unfunny comic. But I really learned a bit of an appreciation for Carrot Top when he was on a season of Last Comic Standing. Just like they were doing one of the challenges with the comics. Mm-hmm. And they had all the comics, and these were like some people who have gotten bigger since then, like Doug Benson was on the season and stuff. And the challenge was like for the comics to kind of come up with their own comedy props and use them in their act. And a lot of them couldn't do it. I mean, it just wasn't their forte. And I really came to appreciate Carrot Top more. He's the best damn Carrot Top there is out there, man.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah, I guess it's just one of the things, like, when you hear prop comic, I guess most comedians kind of roll their eyes and like, oh.
Yeah, yeah, you know. I mean, and I get it. There are a lot of hack prop comics, but, you know, there are a lot of hack impressionists. There are a lot of unfunny topical comics, I mean.
Yeah, there's a lot of those, you know, black people do this, white people walk like this.
Oh, no, every one of those is gold.
Every one of those is just a nugget of genius.
Yep. There's
nothing wrong with that.
Nope.
All right, fair enough. SNL nerds, thumbs up to prop comedies.
Sure, why not?
Okay.
This prop comic we see in this, awful.
But this guy.
This guy sucked.
He kind of dressed like a Disco Stew from The Simpsons.
Kind of, yeah. You know, it's 1979, so that was allowed, I suppose.
Yeah. I was like, right on, brother. All right. But yeah, so the parents come to see his house. They see his neighbor friend, and you know, like you said, they try to bring him back east, and he's like, "No, I'm doing fine out here. This is great. I'm doing fantastic. I want to stay out here more." And then, of course, later that night, we see him just after his foray into prop comedy, immediately throwing away all his props.
Yeah.
Showing that the show did not go well.
Amazingly, like, this movie shows very, very little of Billy on stage, like, actually doing his act. We see it at the very beginning, we see it at the very end, and that's about it, really.
Yeah, very much so. Like, they don't show too much of the in-between where he's still trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Which part of me thinks maybe it could have benefited from doing that.
Honestly, yeah. I would have really liked to see more of Billy and Richard Lewis on stage. I mean, partly because, you know, Richard Lewis wasn't a real polished actor yet, and he comes alive on stage. Like, we see him at the end. He's, you know, and it's, I mean, it's still like young, kind of rawish Richard Lewis, but he's, I mean, it's the best he is in the movie, I'd say.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Because after he bombs with the props. He goes back home, and his parents are like really begging him to come back to New York. And he kind of like snaps a little bit, and he goes on this rant about everything he doesn't like about New York and, you know, living at home and everything. But the way he rants, it's actually kind of funny. And his neighbor Linda is like laughing at all this, like hysterically, and like almost to the point where Linda's like, "No, that's funny. That's what you should be doing." Or
yeah, and he's like, "What? I was just like ranting and And she's like, "No, this is what you should be doing." Yeah,
right. And then so like you said, then it cut to Billy on stage doing the act and him like ranting about New York, and he also talks about how LA is. It's just different. He's like, even the tag on the lug on your luggage says LAX, just lax.
Yeah, yeah. Good line. Like
it's a good line. And like it's like you said, like the last, you know, 5 minutes or so are just Richard Lewis just doing his act. And it's the most natural, comfortable he's been throughout this entire film. And that's pretty much it. Then we just just like him kind of doing his act, getting big laughs. And he makes jokes about all the things we've seen in the movie leading up to the point, like the landlord with the apartment. He wonders where the bugs are in his apartment during the day because you only see them at night. And
right.
Sitting at the children's table during dinner. And then it ends on the joke he did at the beginning of the movie, talking about how, you know, him being in comedy feel like the eighth year of a 9-year fraternity prank. And that gets a laugh. So it ends on him like finding his way, and
he's found his niche.
Yes, he found his niche, and and then that's the movie. Overall, I thought the movie was okay. Like it really did feel like, I know we've said it before, but it really did feel like a student film.
Yeah, it's a very loose kind of ramshackle, shaggy kind of thing. It's only a little over an hour. It honestly feels like longer because it's such a meandering thing.
Yeah, very much so.
So, yeah, I don't know if I could really recommend it. It's, you know, it's interesting to see, like, young Richard Lewis. But other than that, I don't think it had a whole lot to it.
Yeah, there were, according to Wikipedia, the reviews were kind of mixed. John J. O'Connor of the New York Times said it, quote, "a struggling film about a struggling young comedian. Perhaps in a clever attempt to reflect its subject, it is childish, pointless, wildly uneven, and not infrequently devastatingly funny," and added that the film has a generous share of nice touches.
Yeah.
All right. There you go. And but other comedians, or other critics, rather, liked it quite a bit. Like Owen McNally of Hartford Courant said, "Diary of a Young Comic is a clever, offbeat, often amusing special which pinch hits rather capably for Saturday Night Live. Tonight on NBC, it has much of that harsh, satiric kind of comedy that makes SNL an invigorating blast of clean, bracing air in a medium polluted with tedium."
Ooh.
Interesting. All right.
Yeah, I don't know if I saw a whole lot of crossover with the early years of SNL. You know, maybe in some of the film segments, but yeah, it's just...
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. Like another one, the last one. Howard Rosenberg of LA Times said, "film with a sloppy, amorphous, and undisciplined story, and that it is the kind of comedy you would imagine Woody Allen doing as an adolescent, teasingly providing enough unpolished gems to keep us interested and occasionally howling, but never complete satisfaction or evidence that mature artists are at work."
Mm. Yeah.
That's a rough one. And he also said that the energy is there and some of the humor is right on target, but the story is thin and seems to be chiefly a vehicle for one-liners and gags, even some of the best of which ultimately are ruined when carried to excess.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it wasn't quite what I was expecting. I was expecting it to be more of like, I don't know, a docudrama thing. I don't think when you first suggested this, I don't think I really realized that it was going to be a fictional thing. I thought it was going to be actually following Richard Lewis and showing the life of a stand-up comic in 1979. And I think that would have been much more interesting, honestly, to just a little docudrama or documentary subject about Richard Lewis.
Right. I hear you. But yeah, like, I mean, I would have liked to see more about, actually, what you just said. It does sound like way more interesting than what we got. I mean, good.
Gene Siskel test of, you know, whether a movie is good or not. It's like, is this movie more interesting than a feature of the same actors having lunch? And in this case, I would say no.
I would say no. Yeah, I would guess so. Like, I mean, maybe if you're a diehard Richard Lewis fan,
yeah,
this would be good for you to see. But other than that,
check it out. But I mean, honestly, I think you're better off checking out one of his specials, searching for like some old episodes of Anything But Love on the YouTubes.
Yeah, a lot of people brought that up too. Anything But Love, because like, that's like a TV show that it's kind of lost to time, but like it was something that like. Yeah, I remember it being out and it being a hit. I remember it doing well. Like
it did. It ran for about 3 years. I think the ratings just kind of dropped off at one point. But it was like Richard Lewis and Jamie Lee Curtis. And they were both writers for Chicago Magazine, and you know they had the will they won't they thing, which was still that was a very big thing for sitcoms in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah,
and very. I remember watching my first year or two at college, and I enjoyed it. That was part of what made me such a Richard Lewis fan.
Yeah, they were good in it. The late great John Ritter was in a few episodes there for a bit.
Yeah,
yeah.
Ann Magnuson was in it.
Yeah,
Bruce Weitz was on it in the later seasons. It was a good show, and I did after Richard Lewis passed. I looked up a few episodes on YouTube and watched and enjoyed them again.
Right.
It was a lot of fun. I think something I'd really recommend is if you're a Richard Lewis fan, is look up his episodes of Later with Bob Costas.
Mm.
Richard Lewis, he guest starred on Letterman a lot in the 80s. And Later with Bob Costas was the show that ran after Letterman from the mid 80s to like the early 90s. And then it was taken over from other hosts and became more of a typical talk show type of thing. But when it started, it was just Bob Costas talking to people for like a half hour. And Richard Lewis on his second episode, he came on and he made Costas laugh so hard that they actually pulled the episode because they thought that Costas like just doubled over in laughter was kind of undignified. and when they brought Richard Lewis back for another appearance, he had a complex like this. He's like, I don't get it. Like, you know, people are like, we pulled the episode. You made Bob laugh too hard. You were too funny. And so what they did was they have the third episode, which is mostly just Richard Lewis ranting about this and then cutting back to the second episode.
Oh,
like at one point, like Costas is like, he's laughing so hard. He's hunched back in his chair. Like legs off the ground and Richard Lewis is just going off and he's like, he's giving birth. Costas is giving birth. He's the first man to give birth. I don't want to be here, but I'm here. And it's hilarious. So definitely check that out if you want to see how funny Richard Lewis could be.
Yeah, no, that's crazy. Like they had to be like, hey, can you be less funny?
But the way they cut back and forth between the two episodes was just so genius. I'm kind of glad that it ended up that way.
Oh, wow. Absolutely.
Very funny stuff.
Yeah. I mean, as far as movies go, I don't think he's done like some things here and there. Of course, most people remember him from, you know, his final, the final work he did on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I think he was on like Larry Sanders for a little bit. I kind of remember him. There's this movie called The Wrong Guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Where they were like the Cub Scout troop. Yeah. It was him and Belzer and, Louis Anderson and
Franklin Ajay,
he's
like the only, he's like the last guy alive now. Wow.
Yeah. He's like sort of a jazz musician, comedian guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I remember watching that on like Channel 11 or something back in the day. I remember getting a kick out of it. Cause like, yeah, there were like these old, Cub Scout friends that kind of came back together for like a reunion. And then they got involved in some, hijinks in the woods and they have to like rely on their Cub Scout training.
Yeah, I've never seen that. I should check that out sometime.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, like most Gen Xers will remember him as Prince John in Robin Hood Men in Tights, which is like the picture they used in the In Memoriam when the Oscars came out recently.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, like, and he's also played in a few other, he's been in a few other movies. That movie Drunks that came out in 95, mm-hmm. Leaving Las Vegas, like a lot more serious stuff with a more serious.
Yeah. Story. And that kind of arose like, as you know, he had his own issues with addiction, and he wrote a book about it called The Other Great Depression. And it was kind of about how his recovery and all that. Wow. And I did get that book back in the day. I haven't read it since, but I remember enjoying it.
Yeah. But like, if you really want to see Lewis at his best, just watch some of his stand up. Like, he has tons of specials that are still out.
Yeah.
Like the dude, like, I mean, a lot of people say, oh, it kind of, he's kind of doing like a Woody Allen thing, like the neurotic Jewish.
I don't think so. I mean, other than the, you know, neurotic Jew thing, he had a very different style.
Yeah, like he was like a lot more animated.
And yeah, yeah.
Like he was bringing more to it than just, oh, I'm neurotic and I'm blah blah blah. Like there were levels, man. There were levels to what he was bringing.
Yeah, yeah. And he, I mean, he just, I admire that he became such a successful comic just by being uniquely himself. I mean, like, there was no one else like Richard Lewis out there. I mean, he really was one of a kind. So,
yeah, I really can't think of too many comics like back then or even now that I could say fit the mold of what he was doing.
He was just so uniquely himself. I don't see how you could even imitate him, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So rest in peace to Jersey's own, Mr. Richard Lewis.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, this is, yeah, bottom line, it's an interesting curiosity, but, you know, not that great overall.
Yeah, if you're a diehard Richard Lewis devotee, maybe.
Yeah.
You could see him dress up in something other than all black, if you watch the movie. Yeah, other than that. He did have a good look. I will say that. He had, like the leather jacket with, like, the sort of butterfly collar and, like, that little newsy cap.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a kind of, I like that.
It's not a bad look.
I would probably wear something like that back in the day.
He was a good-looking guy. He had, nice feathered hair going on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, Richie. Go on
good,
now.
Good-looking dude.
Go on, baby. And, that's our episode, guys. Thanks again for listening to the podcast, as always. You can follow us on all social media at, what was it? Oh, yeah, SNL Nerds Show.
Yeah, that is still the address, yes. Yes.
That is still the address. And as always,
and we have our own social media as well. Like, for instance, just to, pull an example out of thin air, I'm at Trumbull Comic. That's Trumbull, and the word comic. It's on the Twitter and the Instagram and the Blue Sky and, even a few other places. Who knows?
Yeah. And I'm at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N Credible. So find me on all platforms, everywhere and anywhere.
That's right. That's right. And, you can keep up with us at the non-productive.com. And you can, check out all our new episodes that they upload over there. You can contribute to our Patreon. You can get the new episodes early and you help us keep the podcast going.
Absolutely. Please do. We gotta keep this little boat afloat, people.
That's true.
Yeah. So we need help from viewers like you.
Yes. Or listeners like you.
Or listeners. Oh yeah. You can't see this.
No. We don't photograph. We're vampires.
I forget how viewing works.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, that's the episode, and join us next week. Brand new episode of SNL with host Rami Youssef, Jersey's own, and musical guest Travis Scott.
Join us, won't you? But until then, nerds out.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.